This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We begin today with a quick anecdote from Deshauna Temple, a student at Hyde Park High, about a teacher who should probably consider another line of work.
So I've had this teacher, and she'll, like, cry in class.
Oh.
For, like, the whole...
I've had those.
For the whole entire period, like... crying about her life and how much they don't do nothing for her at the school. Like, if you feel that way, why not just quit?
Why not just quit? When you're young, the solution seems so straightforward, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I think I know how she feels. We've all had one or two bad teachers.
Maybe more than one or two. What about you, Meghna?
Well, I have to say, I was lucky. I did have mostly excellent teachers, but there was one back when I was in ninth grade. He taught personal finance. That's what they called it back then. And he would come into the classroom with a single transparency. I'm really dating myself here, but he would put it on the overhead projector and it would have something like a check on it. And he would say, "This is a check. Open up your books to page 54 and learn how to write a check. Practice that." And then he would leave the classroom and not come back.
I think I had a couple of those. So what happened to yours?
He worked until he retired.
And that's the problem. And it's our focus today as our series Making an A-plus Teacher continues. On Monday, we talked about what makes a great teacher. Today, the flip side, bad teachers, what impact they have, and how to get rid of them. We'll start with some background from WBUR's Monica Brady Meyerhoff, who reports on a phenomenon in Boston called the Dance of the Lemons.
Essentially, it's moving bad teachers around to different schools instead of firing them. It goes like this. I'm the principal, and I have a teacher who isn't making the grade, but I think it would be too hard to help them improve. So instead of giving them a bad performance review, I give them a satisfactory evaluation and strongly suggest they volunteer to go into what's called the excess pool, a pool of excess teachers. Schools must select from the excess pool when hiring new teachers. And that is the Dance of the Lemons.
Well, I have heard that terminology.
Boston Superintendent Carol Johnson.
What we're trying to do is stop the dance, not move people from place to place, but expect principals and headmasters to do a high-quality review and make the tough decision.
Although Boston's not the only district that shifts around bad teachers, it's been a known problem here for a while. Johnson's predecessor, Thomas Paizant, who led BPS for 11 years and is now at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, says he knows it went on under his tenure, but he's sympathetic to principals who don't have the time it takes to document and fire bad teachers.
The amount of work that a principal has to do with data and other evidence of lack of performance and meeting standards can take hours and hours of time.
5 years ago, under Paizant, Boston Public Schools only fired 12 teachers in 1 year. The rate has steadily improved under Johnson as she works to conduct more evaluations, the cornerstone of removing a teacher. Last year, 57 teachers were fired or resigned due to bad evaluations. That's still only around 1% of teachers fired each year, when the statewide average is 8%.
Okay.
Johnson pulls out a bright orange book the size of a small paperback. It's the 255-page union contract.
So on page 83 and 84 of the teacher's contract, it spells out in great detail.
Johnson explains the procedures to get a tenured teacher fired are really complicated. A principal must start by rating a teacher unsatisfactory and then document why they are considered failing. This can be subjective because the state has never used student test scores in teacher evaluation. New regulations will require principals to use them in the future. And this proposed new system will also speed up the firing process, but only if administrators take that first step. And Johnson knows many don't, and thus bad teachers are tolerated in the classroom.
Right now, our process is somewhat cumbersome. You have to go through so many steps, meet so many deadlines, that it makes it really hard to get through the process, and so that's very frustrating.
It's only cumbersome if you're lazy.
Richard Stutman is president of the Boston Teachers Union.
It takes, I think, a reasonably sophisticated administrator who is somewhat diligent, 2 or 3 hours to do a full evaluation of an unsatisfactory or a needs improvement teacher. I don't really think that's an onerous responsibility.
Stuttman says for bad teachers to be called lemons because they are in the excess pool is insulting because they haven't done anything wrong.
It is impossible to get into the excess pool if you have an unsatisfactory. But the school department can't have it both ways. They employ the principals. The principals have all sorts of authority under the state ed reform law. And if they give the person a satisfactory, then shame on them for calling that person a lemon. They should look in the mirror.
There's a lot of blame to go around. Only 41 out of nearly 5,000 teachers were rated as unsatisfactory by their principals in the 2008-2009 school year. That's according to the National Center for Education Statistics. Also, one quarter of schools didn't turn in a single evaluation for a two-year period. Johnson says she is beefing up the evaluation system with a team of people dedicated to help principals. Studies show outstanding teachers produce higher-performing students. Boston students Brittany Edwards and Ehi Sosifo agree.
Good teachers, I feel like they just take the extra mile that they're not required to take, but that just makes them so much better, like ones that push you and make learning fun.
I feel like the best teachers, like when you graduate from high school, they're the ones you remember.
And the bad teachers, unfortunately, can be hard to forget. For WBUR, I'm Monica Brady-Meyerov.
Well, we are talking about bad teachers as part of WBUR's special series, Making an A-plus Teacher. And you can join us. What is a bad teacher to you, and how do you actually measure those qualities? Is it test scores or peer evaluations? And what impact do you think bad teachers have on students and their education? And when you hear about all this new focus on bad teachers, are reform efforts on the right track here, or are these teachers just a distraction from where our real efforts should be when it comes to improving education? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also comment online at radioboston.org or on Facebook and Twitter. We're at Radio Boston. Well, joining us now is Cynthia Brown. She's Vice President for Education Policy at the Center for American Progress, and they, in 2010, released a report called Removing Chronically Ineffective Teachers, Barriers and Opportunities. Cynthia Brown, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Also with us is Diane Ravitch. She was U.S. Assistant Secretary of Education from 1991 to 1993. She's currently a professor of education at New York University, one of the foremost voices on education in America. Her latest book is The Death and Life of Great American School Systems, How Testing and Choice Are Undermining Education. Diane Ravitch, welcome to Radio Boston.
Well, thank you so much. Great to be with you.
Well, Cindy Brown, if I can actually just start with you. So we heard in Monica Brady-Meyerov's report there, the system in Boston, the dance of the lemons, as they call it. But tell me, I mean, from a national perspective, is what we're seeing here in Boston unique, or it is similarly difficult across the nation to remove bad teachers from the classroom?
Well, It's unfortunately, the situation in Boston is found across the country, but there's also some good news. Like Boston, many school districts are now in the process of really developing more sophisticated evaluation systems and looking at how their teachers are doing, not only to get rid of the weakest teachers who fail to improve with help, but to help other teachers who need to improve their practice and show promise of doing so if they get help and support.
Mm-hmm. So that's the good news. But on the other hand, we also heard in Monica's report that even with existing systems of evaluation, for example, a quarter of schools in Boston didn't even turn in a single evaluation for 2 years. So if that's part of the problem, how is it that, you know, we can better identify bad teachers if their administrators aren't even willing to do evaluations as they stand?
Well, administrators have to be held accountable, too, and part of their job is to do evaluations. Now, it's tough for a principal, particularly of a large school, to evaluate thoroughly every teacher in their school, and that's why you've got to develop additional ways of doing the evaluations, help from assistant principals, help from teacher coaches, teacher leaders. Peer evaluators can play a big role in evaluating teachers, but it's totally irresponsible not to turn in evaluation mm-hmm. systems, and there has to be some accountability of people people without authority. They shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Well, Diane Ravitch, let me ask you, I mean, the evaluation question is one of those things that's at the heart of this issue, and I want to dive into that a little deeper in a moment. But if I could just step back and ask you, you've been very vocal about this in the recent past. You don't think that even identifying bad teachers as an issue is the direction that we should be heading when it comes to improving education in America?
Well, that's not quite right. I don't think there should be any bad teachers in American schools. I don't think there should be any bad lawyers or bad doctors. The problem that I've had is that using test scores does not identify bad teachers. Frequently, it identifies excellent teachers who have a difficult class or excellent teachers who are teaching special education where they will not see a big test score gain, or even teachers of the gifted where the kids are so high up that any drop in their score by 5/100ths of a percent will make them appear to be a bad teacher. The test scores are highly unreliable. In your introductory statement that said that studies show that test scores are a way of identifying good teachers, that's wrong. Testing experts in this country are almost unanimously opposed to using test scores as a way of evaluating teachers. The most important way to identify bad teachers, and I certainly think we should get rid of every bad teacher, is to have principals, assistant principals, responsible adults in the school who evaluate them and who say, you don't belong in teaching. What your introductory comments left out is that we have an enormous teacher turnover in this country. 50% of the people who enter teaching leave within the first 5 years. Mm-hmm. Many of them got fired before they ever qualified for due process rights, which you call tenure. Now, once someone gets tenure, once someone gets due process rights, they're entitled to a hearing. But that's in a contract that it took two parties to sign. What we have right now is an attack on unions that say unions are making all these terrible decisions, and unions are imposing these terrible rules. And people forget the administration signed the contract. The union can't unilaterally write its own contract.
Indeed. So as you said, it takes two sides here. But let me push back just a tiny bit here, because in our research today, you know, we basically uncovered that in Massachusetts, the attrition rate, so not just the removal of bad teachers, but the overall attrition rate for teachers is roughly 7%.
What about new teachers amongst the people in the first 5 years?
That's actually a good question, and I'll admit I don't have the
Where the attrition is very high, because for the first, depending on the district or on the state, for the first 3 to 4 years, teachers can be fired with no due process whatsoever. And if a teacher is a bad teacher, it's up to the principal or the school to say, sorry, you're not going to make it. You leave the profession.
Well, then
latitude to fire bad teachers.
What about then in the case of teachers that have achieved tenure? As we heard in the piece that preceded our conversation, that, as you said, yes, it takes two parties to agree to these contracts, but the contracts exist as they do today. We have to deal with the reality as it is today. In the case of teachers who have achieved tenure and those who do eventually get evaluated and are found to be maybe not up to snuff, it seems awfully hard to then remove them from the classroom. I mean, why should it be so difficult?
It's actually not that hard. And I've talked to many principals who say what you have to do is you have to document that they're incompetent, and then they are entitled to a hearing. That's all due process is that once you have had 3 or 4 years, depending on your locality or your state, then you're entitled to a hearing. That doesn't seem to me an un-American thing. To give principals the right to fire teachers right off the bat means that you have, first of all, a lot of principals who are not even doing the evaluations. You have many principals who probably, maybe they should have a third party have a hearing, an impartial hearing. That doesn't seem like such a bad mm-hmm. idea. If the hearing process takes too long, then the district is at fault for agreeing to having this prolonged hearing.
Right.
I think that any district worth its mettle will sit down with the union and negotiate a fair and reasonable period of time where the administration demonstrates that we have sat in on your hearings, your lessons. You've had peer review. You've had opportunities to improve. You haven't taken them. An impartial administrator will then say you're fired.
Mm-hmm.
But once somebody has gone through 3 or 4 years of being reviewed by the leadership of the school and told you're a good teacher, you're going to stay, you get due process rights, All they get is the right to a hearing. And if that's too much, then the administration should go back in the next contract
and renegotiate.
Because no contract is a lifetime contract. I'm sure the contract will expire. And then the administration can then sit down and talk about it.
Well, Cindy Brown, let me ask you one thing that I have to say is still unclear to me is that there is a lot of attention all the way from the current Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, to, you know, as we're hearing here in Massachusetts at the state and local level on this issue of bad teachers. But it is, I'll be honest, it is not clear to me what effect, you know, small, medium, large, that, you know, the few percent of bad of teachers who are identified as bad are really having on their students. I mean, in your report, there's one number that says the L.A. public schools had identified that if they removed, if this is hypothetical, the bottom 25% of teachers, that would improve student test scores by just over 1% annually. So is this really sort of I guess what I'm asking is this a straw man when we're saying bad teachers are a major part of the problem?
They're a part of the problem. There are three ways they affect what goes on in a school. First of all, a teacher can have anywhere from 20 kids to 200 students in a school year. So that's a fairly substantial number of students to affect. And if they're doing it throughout a career, a 20-year career, you can do the multiplication. That gets pretty high. Secondly, if the weakest teachers, the continually weak teachers, are not removed, it sends a message throughout the school that evaluation systems aren't going to be taken seriously, that there are no consequences for your performance. And then finally, incompetent teachers diminish the school culture and make it difficult to have a really rich learning environment for all the teachers and students.
So you're saying that there's some
school.
There's a ripple effect, even if it's not the easiest thing to measure. I've got a lot of callers who want to join us in this conversation, and let me invite them in. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We are talking about bad teachers in WBUR's special series, Making an A-plus Teacher. Let's get several voices in here. John is calling from Cambridge. You're on the air, John.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. What's your thought today?
My thought is I'm a teacher, and I would put a lot of the blame on administration. I mean, either you have an administrator who is responsible for reviewing anywhere from 40 to 60 teachers, and they have to do the review, you know, in the first 2 months of school, and that's impossible. You can't go into that many classrooms and get a good idea of what is actually happening. Or, you know, you can have, administrators who have review teachers who have gotten bad reviews, and then nothing happens.
Mm-hmm. John, thank you so much for your call. I want to just piggyback off that with our next caller, who happens to be an administrator. Jim is calling from Foxborough. You're on the air, Jim.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually a new administrator who was a foreign language teacher. I had lost my position to the budget and ended up stumbling into an administrative position out of need, and I was perplexed at how my perspective had changed from a teacher's perspective to an administrator's perspective. And John's comment really is exactly why I'm calling, because I don't think that the teachers realize what the administrators have to do in order to sustain those certain levels of achievement in a school.
Mm-hmm.
The administration, from their standpoint, have so much on their line, even doing the reviews of the teachers. We're currently, I'm a rookie administrator, and we have a new administration in our school who is really putting the challenge to the teachers now. They're pushing them, they're really making sure that they're being held accountable, and they have decided just now to non-renew four teachers currently, and it has really been an alter in the culture at our school.
Jim, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but actually I think you're hitting upon this point that I would love to hear both of our guests respond to. Thank you so much for your call. Diane Ravitch, you know, your response to the two callers who heard both sides of the issue, essentially, and they come to the same question or the same point where there's a big cultural question here when it comes to education and how we deal with teachers. Your response to that?
Yeah, what I have to say, and it goes back to your previous conversation, is that in a sense this whole issue, while it's important, and I want to stress, there should be no bad teachers, and every school should do everything it can to help teachers improve, and that peer review and careful evaluation, and what you should put this in context to see is Massachusetts is far and away the highest performing state in the nation. Mm-hmm. You should not be having a conversation about how do we get so many bad teachers, but rather how did we get so many great teachers? Why is Massachusetts far and away 100 times better than all those non-union states and right-to-work states that don't even allow people to collectively bargain?
Well, just so that how you know, we did have that conversation on Monday. That was actually how we kicked off this special series.
Well,
we spent
a
whole yeah. I know
I
you weren't
part of
you
that.
You weren't part
but
of that. But
if
we
I can just
sure we're just
ta-
we
just
are taking a broad
point.
Sure, but I just want you to assure you we are taking a broad look at this, not just the bad teacher slice.
Okay. The rest of my point, though, is, and you raised this with Sandy Brown. Is this really the crucial issue about education performance? No, this is not the crucial issue. The crucial issue that drags down performance is poverty. The crucial issue is that in America, 25% of our kids live in poverty. I'm sure that if you look at the Massachusetts scores and district by district, you'll find the lowest test scores in the poorest communities. You'll find the lowest scores in the neighborhoods where the children are in poverty or have special needs or don't speak English. So to say that somehow bad teachers are, if you should remove every single one of them, and you will still face low academic performance when you have not addressed the problems associated with poverty and not even knowing the language.
Mm. Cindy Brown, your response.
Poverty certainly has effect on how students do in school. They often come to school. There are often big achievement gaps between students when they enter school based on their family income. But we have lots of evidence that schools can make a difference in the lives of low-income and otherwise disadvantaged students. We have many existence proofs of schools that can do that and many teachers who are very effective at working with disadvantaged students. Now, we have a lot of teachers that are not very well prepared to do that, and that's why another reason why these evaluations are important. We need to identify teachers who need some help in strengthening how they work in the classroom. All of us, or at least I'll speak for myself, I've learned a lot on the job since I went to college and graduate school, and we should expect the same of teachers, and we need to help them in identifying where there are parts of their practice they need to strengthen, because we do have lots of proof that, mm-hmm. that teachers can make a difference in the lives of low-income and English language learners and students with disabilities.
Well, let me get some more calls in here now. Claudia is calling from Wrentham. You're on the air, Claudia.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to call and give a student's perspective. I go to a high school in the suburbs of Boston. And my freshman year, I had a math teacher who we definitely had a personality conflict, but I think that bad teaching is more than that, because I would have my parents, like, they emailed her and would call her and ask, like, what I could do to study at home and stuff like that. And she said that the math she taught couldn't be found in a book. So there was no way for me to study. I was helpless. I didn't have a book. I had no resource. And I definitely think that that is, like, a bad teacher. And I think that, and she had established tenure, and so she couldn't be let go. And I definitely think that tenure shouldn't be considered if somebody is that bad and that, like, difficult to deal with.
Claudia, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Dorchester, and Mike is on the line. You're on the air, Mike.
Great conversation, Magna. Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you folks. The conversation starts to go one side towards the district and their responsibilities, and another side towards the union and their responsibilities. One thing that I think that both sides need to do more effectively or accurately is, how do we quantify or define a bad teacher? I have a child who has a very good teacher in relative to the things that she is taught and how she performs. However, every day she comes home and tells me about the issues that this particular teacher is dealing with in his life every day.
Mm. Mike, that's a great question. Let me just turn it back to our guests. Plainly speaking, Diane Ravitch, how would we quantify what is a bad teacher?
There is no way of quantifying it. It's fundamentally a matter of human judgment. And I could give you example after example of teachers who were misclassified when you use test scores, because, as I mentioned earlier, the overwhelming majority, almost the unanimity of testing experts in America, agree that test scores are not a quantifiable way of judging who's a good teacher and who's a bad teacher. I was recently in an elementary school in New York City in Brooklyn, where there was a teacher of a gifted who was called one of the least effective teachers in the city, because her class entered at a 3.97, mm-hmm. which is close to perfect. Four is perfect. And they left at 3.92. So they lost 0.05 of a point. The tests are not that good. To destroy this woman's career, to end her to ruin her reputation, and her principal said to me, she's one of the best teachers in the building, and 0.05 of a point is meaningless, and the city has rated her as a totally ineffective teacher.
Are there alternative ways then? Because, I mean, the horse has kind of left the barn on this one. No Child Left Behind encourages testing. I mean,
excuse
the race.
Excuse me. No, I have a book and was showing that No Child Left Behind is a disaster. And unfortunately, the Gates Foundation and the Duncan administration have tied their kite to this idea that tests will show us everything, and we're ruining education
in this
country.
So what would the alternative method be? And Cindy Brown, please chime in after this, but I'm just curious.
I was just going to say, I think that she's mischaracterizing the administration and the Gates Foundation. They think that test scores should play a role in looking at the effectiveness of a student, of a teacher with her class of students, but that it's only part of the story. And I don't think there's there really is a variety of opinion among researchers about the value of using test score gains over a year to show how much they've learned in a teacher's classroom. But it should never be the total part of an evaluation system, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
We know that evaluations of the future are going to have several components, and there's a considerable research being done and experimentation and trying out new ways of evaluating teachers with teachers who have volunteered to be a part of these new experiments. What, for example, we know some of these experiences are videotaping teachers four different times during the school year and then sending those videos to master teachers off-site who have been well-trained in looking at the videos and evaluating the quality of the work the teachers have been doing. That would be one portion of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing we know is that student surveys can actually give a pretty accurate reflection of how a teacher is doing. The work of Ron Ferguson at Harvard University up in your neck of the woods, the work he's done developing very sophisticated student surveys, different ones for different ages, and the results of these surveys that have been fine-tuned over the years show that students actually can differentiate among their teachers and that a lot their evaluations of their teachers oftentimes correlate with the test score information and with observations that are being done not only by the videos but by their principals.
So there are a variety of methods that if applied together, you know, we can come up with alternative means of evaluation. Diane Ravitch, hang on for just a second here because I want to play a piece of tape from someone that we interviewed a while ago, and that's Randy Weingarten. She is the president of the American Federation of Teachers, one of the largest teachers unions in the United States. And you know, because it sounds like from our conversation, it seems like there's no middle ground, but she was actually staking a middle ground on this question of evaluations and teachers on our show recently. Here's what she had to say about dealing with ineffective educators.
There's a way of doing this. Let's stop making excuses. We want to help somebody after a long career before you say, you know, here's a kick in the pants. But ultimately, we think you can do that in a 1-2-3 step evaluation, then ultimately help. And if not, a quick process out of the profession.
So that's the voice of one of the most influential teachers unions in the United States. We've just got a minute or so to go, and I know we could actually have quite an extensive conversation about this as the nation is. But Diane Ravitch, you know, your sort of takeaway thought on where do we really, I'm looking for answers on where do we go from here on this part of the education dilemma in America.
First of all, what I said is consistent with Randy Weingarten, with what she just said. We shouldn't have bad teachers. They should be judged by their supervisors and by their peers. The Gates Foundation has this fascination with finding a number and videotaping people and giving money out to advocacy groups like the Center for American Progress to press this notion that there's a number we can find that students should be the judges. If you judge teachers by test scores, you are putting in the hands of the students the power to fire their teachers. That's wrong. That will change the whole authority authority balance in the classroom. I'm a historian. I've been looking at this issue for this issue and many others for 40 years. Mm-hmm. If we don't deal with the social problems, if we demonize the teaching profession, which, by the way, this is what this whole discussion is doing, is tarring all anyone that a student doesn't like as a bad teacher.
I have to say, we're not attempting to demonize anybody in the profession. What we're looking for...
I'm telling you, that is what is happening across America,
hopefully,
and I
not
am speaking across this country.
There is definitely a mood here, and hopefully not in this conversation in particular. And on that note, I'm very sorry, but we've run out of time. Diane Ravitch, former Assistant Secretary of Education and Professor of Education at New York University, thank you so much for being with us. And
thank you.
Cynthia Brown, Vice President of Education Policy at the Center for American Progress, thank you as well. Midi's politics flares up in Boston. We'll hear more about it in just a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.